Are you caught in the whirlwind of overwhelming responsibilities? And does the very thought of Monday morning send chills down your spine? Well, it's time to toss those feelings out the window. Welcome to Season 3 of the Take Notes podcast, where you get to make yourself the priority in order to show up as your best self. I'm your host, Jen Rafferty, former music teacher, emotional intelligence practitioner, mom of two, and founder of Empowered Educator. And I've been where you are. In this season, we're not just talking about surviving, we are diving deep into thriving. Are you ready to take the lead in your life? Well, let's do this. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Take Notes. I am here today with two incredible people. We're going to be talking about leadership today. With me is Walt Polka and John McKenna from Niagara University. Thank you so much for being here and sharing your time and your talents with us.
Thank you for having us. We really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today.
Looking forward to a good conversation with you, Jennifer. Yes.
Same here. So I'd love to just dive in because I know you two play a big role in the leadership program at Niagara University. And I want to paint a broad picture with broad strokes here about what makes a good leader. There are so many resources. There's so much literature. There are so many personality tests and different things we can take about what our strengths are. But from where you're standing and in the work that you've done, if we were to boil it down, what are the characteristics that make a really good leader?
Leadership is all about relationships. Relationships and more relationships, okay? It's about the individual who either assumes or has been appointed as a leader in an organization to be sure that they develop excellent interpersonal relationships with the people in their organization. They need to have that from a basis of a human relationship, a high-touch approach. They need to be sure that people in the organization know that they care. We often say in our books that, you know, like students, but employees also, they don't really care how much you know until they know how much you care about them and their work and their organization. And they also have needs that have to be fulfilled, and the leader has to attend to those. But the best way to start attending to them is to be sure you know your people, who you work with, and also you need to know yourself. So it's knowing yourself, knowing the people you work with, and making sure you attend to relationships.
Yeah, and I would agree with Walt wholeheartedly, and I'll just add a few things. I think that some of the qualities that I think matter quite a bit are being kind, caring, and empathetic. I think that those three words, you'll hear me say those three words a lot because they're just baked into what I believe in and what I stand for. And when I think of Stephen Covey's Seven Habits, related to that is seek first to understand and then be understood. I think all good leaders try to do that. And another one of the habits I think are really important is find win-win solutions. Because so often things become adversarial and controversial. And if we could sit down and really work together and try to see things from each other's opinion, I really do believe that you can always find win-win solutions to make things move forward in a positive way.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, that was a fundamental book in my research and my learning and my growth and development too, and in the work that I'm doing. So I'm glad you brought up that book. I agree with everything that you're saying. And I'm sure you've experienced this yourself from all sorts of ends of the spectrum in the work that you do in this world now. But there are a lot of people out there who really believe that they are great leaders. And it turns out they're not. So how do we address that self-reflective piece? Because Walt, you had said one of the last things that you had shared is knowing yourself. Can we go there for a little bit and spend some time of really getting to some concrete strategies and ways to have that sense of reflection so you can know yourself?
I think that's very important. You need to reflect. You need to recognize, and I'll go to the work of Huzitz and Posner and other leadership individuals, that leadership can be learned, okay? You can learn to become, there's a leader in all of us, and John's done a lot of work with the organization and in terms of the leader in me for people in schools, students, but that everyone has the potential to be the leader. You need to look at yourself, your personality, what you like to do, what are your hot buttons, and identify how you can modify those or need to modify those to fit into the situation. Okay, there's situational ethics and situational leadership. You need to know the people in your organization. You need to know the organization. You need to know its mission, its vision. You also need to know its context. And that's what we stressed a lot in the managing yourself and others during crisis times. The book that we first did on this topic related to COVID is that you need to know who you are, your strengths, and reflect about that. And you're going to take risks. In terms of COVID, leaders all along the spectrum, principals, superintendents, teachers, people were taking risks in territories that they had no roadmap for, okay? They were in a new era, and they needed to take the risk that they felt comfortable with. But not everyone feels that comfortable with the risk. So you have to know, what's your risk level? What's your commitment, your involvement with your organization? So you have to do a lot of self-assessment. And I like the Gandhi quote, you want to be the kind of change that you want to see in the world. And if you just take that again to turn it into, you want to be the kind of leader that you believe this organization needs at this time.
I'll piggyback on that too. And I think that being self-reflective, everybody agrees, is an important part of being a leader. And every leader thinks they are self-reflective, whether they are or they're not. Everyone seems to think they are. And I reflect on the work of Brené Brown, and she talks about vulnerability and how you have to have courage to be vulnerable. And that's what I think people in leadership really need, the courage to put yourself out there, to really take constructive advice and constructive criticism sometimes, and be willing to take that and say, yeah, this is how I can improve, and this is how I can be better. And I know, I think of the years when I was a building principal, I used to always do an evaluation. I used to have the staff evaluate me. And I did it anonymously, and I'd put it out there, and I'd say, I want your feedback. I want to hear what you have to say. And every year, I would get this feedback. And some was positive, and some was, this is how you need to improve, John. And it was important that I did that, because you need to get the honest truth sometimes, and not just with our own lenses, because we always see things. I think we always naturally tend to think that the things we do as leaders are right, and the things we're doing are good. And we need to have those constructive voices out there, and we have to be open. And that's why I like the work of Brené Brown about vulnerability. We need to put ourselves out there to be able to accept those types of things and then make the adjustments necessary to improve and become better. So that's where I think why leadership sometimes is rare in that case, is because a lot of folks aren't willing to be vulnerable to really hear and listen that maybe what they're doing isn't the right and correct thing. But if you really want to be the best leader possible, you have to be willing to take that constructive advice and then move forward and make yourself better.
Fortunately, in education, some of our leaders of school districts advocate all of what John said for their followers, for their principals, for their district-level employees, and so on. But you know, Jennifer, they don't really practice it on themselves. One of my doctoral students, Jeffrey Raby, who was superintendent in a couple school districts in Western New York, and during his tenure as an active superintendent, did his research on that very topic of reflection of superintendents in New York State in 2014. And he found that was one of the least activities they engaged in. And the follow-up data from that over the years has shown it hasn't changed much. We advocate it for others, but sometimes it's very hard for us to recognize that we need to do it. We need to do that 360-degree review of what we're doing and when we're doing it.
Yeah. So I have a couple things that I want to say, because I'm so glad that we went here now, because the work that I do also is really communicating the fact, particularly to leaders, but to everybody in the school, is that your impact is dependent on your ability to look inward and your own personal growth journey. And a lot of what you're saying really has to do with this idea of dropping your ego and creating a space to be vulnerable. And by doing that, redefining what it means to be a leader. So I'm wondering, for you personally, what is it like? What is the process for you to receive that 360 feedback? receive a piece of information that might not be a glowing review, and for you to be able to drop your ego enough to say, okay, this is how I'm going to show up as a leader because this is what my organization actually needs. What is that like for you?
I think too often people mistake bravado and ego for leadership. And what they end up doing is you get these people that are just loud and they come across like they have all the answers. And so often they lead teams right over a cliff, right? They're not sick. They're so often you see these stories where they're not successful. And one of the things that I've learned through the years is through teamwork, cooperation, and empowerment, that's how you make the best decisions. When you really get like consensus and build teams and you're really working together, that gets the best outcomes. Because to me, leadership is about what is going to bring about the best results, the best outcomes. And what I've found is when we work together, listen to all people, share the leadership, you always will end up in a better place. And one of the most important things about that is that people own the change. They believe in the change. They know the purpose of why you're doing what you're doing. And then when you have that as your North Star, you're going to get to where you're supposed to be. But if it's just somebody dictating to you or yelling at you to do something, very ineffective as far as I've seen in my years of experience.
Too many settings. A number that was like those individuals who could yell the loudest or seemed to have the strongest voice or had the whistle to blow, came from maybe a strong athletic background, had that sense of how they could direct the team. They became the administrators, and then they moved up the ladder to the superintendency, and we've all worked, or they were ex-military individuals. One of the first principals that I worked for was a retired major from the Air Force, okay, and he was very authoritative because that was his training and his background. I think we've come somewhat away from there, but there are still some issues with how people were initially trained and what their expectations are. We need to continue to focus on self-reflection. Are you the right fit with your behaviors and your attitudes and values now for this situation? And maybe you need to change because you know what? The context isn't going to change that much. You know, if you're in an urban school, it's going to be an urban school probably in the next 20, 30, 50 years. If you're in a rural school, it's probably going to stay that way. So you have to adjust and see how your leadership will fit. Takes a lot of reflection.
There's a book by Alan Blankenstein called Failure is Not an Option. And there's a concept that he puts forward that says the answer is in the room. And I've always believed in that, that especially I go back to my time as a building principal, and I would work with the staff. There's so many experts and people in this room that know exactly what they're doing. And so often they're just not tapped into that power of knowledge and experience and passion that they have. And I think that when you tap into the room and you tap into that power of all of those people and all that they bring, man, oh man, that's when an organization, it's game changing for what you can achieve and accomplish.
Yes, I totally agree. And I think as a teacher sitting in these meetings, trying to problem solve, knowing that there's a wealth of information and knowledge sitting in this room not being tapped into is frustrating. And I remember very vividly occasions like that you're describing right now. So, John, I want to actually stay in this space for a second because both of you, what you're saying is so true and speaks so much truth. But I want to know about that moment when you receive that feedback, when you get a piece of information that someone is unsatisfied with how you particularly are handling something. Sure. What is the process for you? And I'm asking this because it is, I imagine, you know, someone's listening to this in their car on their way to work. And it's like, okay, what you're saying is great. And cognitively, I'm totally with you. But in that moment, when you're alone reading that piece of feedback on your computer, what is a process for you? And what is something that somebody can do that's an actionable step so they can start to be the change that they want to see and be the leader that they can become?
I think it's normal. The first time we see something that's negative against us, I know we probably naturally have a recoiling effect to say that person's wrong. I'm right. I know I'm right. And I think then it's like we have to intentionally be able to coach ourselves to say, no, wait a second, I got to take a step back here. I want to look at this with true lenses and find out where the truth lies. Because, and then I started to develop the thing of, even if, let's say, I disagree, let's say, with this feedback or whatever, for one reason or another, they still have that feedback and that's real to them. So I have to do things to correct that. I have to address it. And I have to make sure that we take all types of constructive advice seriously. And I say, too, even if people have a false perception, I want to help. If I say, oh, they got their facts and information wrong, I got to work with them in a way so that we can work cooperatively and collegially, and so that they do understand the gist. Because probably if they're not getting it, it's my fault that they're not getting it. So I have to do work on my end to make sure that they're receiving the information in a way that I wanted them to. Because as a leader, I want people to receive the information the right way. I want to send a message, right? I'm the messenger, they're the receiver. And you want to make sure that the message you're sending is received correctly. And if for some reason it's not, that's why that feedback is good. Even if you feel, I don't know if I necessarily agree with this, then you have to do more work there. You have to make sure that you get on the same page. And be thankful when you get that, because it gives you that opportunity then to work with that person cooperatively to find some middle ground in that. Because if you don't, you know what happens? They then go out and start saying more negative things, and negativity starts to grow. So that's why I even got a real positive outlook on receiving this negative feedback, because it helps me to then do the work that I need to do as a supervisor and leader to make things better. There's a couple of things that really stick out to me too that were very helpful to me. And I know you probably, some of you, anyone's watched Ted Lasso, he has a picture of the John Wooden's Pyramid of Success on his wall. And I love the Pyramid of Success. Right near the top of the very top is competitive greatness. But right below that is this idea of poise and confidence. And poise is so important. And John Wooden talks about it a lot, how important it is for leaders to have poise, that you can't overreact. You have to be thoughtful in your responses and what you do. And so many people don't have poise. They just react and they let the emotion get to them and they let emotion rule them. So the best leaders definitely embrace poise before they speak and react. And then another piece of research that really helped me through the years is Daniel Goleman's research on emotional intelligence. I remember reading emotional intelligence and thinking, I want that. I want to be able to have that kind of confidence and that type of self-reflection. And reading the work of Goleman really helped me to really work on that aspect. And it is work sometimes that we do have to work on being patient and kind and understanding, and we have to be intentional with those types of actions. So those are the things that those kinds of resources through the years helped me to say, help me do self-improvement and become a better person.
Yeah, that is the work that makes everything else work. It is work. And from where I stand, it is the most important work, because patience and love and kindness outwards does not always come easily when your system is feeling attacked. And it doesn't always come easily to yourself. How often are you giving yourself that patience and love and kindness? And how can we possibly expect ourselves to give it outwards if we're not being kind to ourselves? And that work of emotional intelligence is essential, I think, for everyone in education. I mean, the world, but particularly in education, especially for leaders.
I wanted to mention also that I learned some really great lessons from the research and work of Todd Whitaker, that in his book, What Great Principals Do Differently, there's a chapter in here that he calls Treat Everyone with Respect Every Day, All the Time. And if you read it, it talks about how it's a leader's responsibility to show respect at all times. And that's, it's an intentional skill that you have to learn as a leader, because there's people that are going to want to drag you into arguments and drag you into places where you show disrespect. They want you to show disrespect. So you have to know that you have to intentionally treat everyone with respect and professionalism all the time. It's a responsibility that leaders have. And again, it's one of those things that you learn through the years. But the good thing is that you can learn these skills. And personally, I've learned from mistakes through the past where I know I've made some mistakes in the past where I got dragged into some situations where I said, oh my gosh, I'm never doing that again. And you learn. And then hopefully we can share that with, you know, Walt and I, as we work with prospective administrators, we try to teach them these skills that, you know, if they're going to be the leaders, they have to exemplify respect, poise, patience, empathy. These are the things that they need to do on a daily basis. I think, well, you're just talking about it's a 24/7 responsibility.
Yeah, one of the things that I try to impress upon my students in leadership and in the superintendent certification programs and so on is that you accept this position, you need to recognize it's a 24/7, 365-day job. It's more than a job. It's your career. It's you. And understand it's 24/7, 365-day position. You're the big fish in the goldfish bowl. And people are always watching you. It doesn't matter if you're in front of a board meeting, doing a faculty meeting, or shopping in a local grocery store, or having dinner with your family out. People are watching you, and people are saying, that's the superintendent, that's the director of personnel. That they're identifying you with that role.
I have a question about that, because I had several leadership roles in my district, and as a person in that role, particularly in the music department, because I was in front of the entire community about 30 times a year for concerts, you know, and board meetings and all of the things. And I felt at the time, I feel a little bit differently now, a lot differently now, but I felt at the time that there was a sense of performativity on my part, mm-hmm. that I needed to play this role of somebody who had this leadership position. And that role to me, in my mind, included things like the way that I dressed, the way that I interacted with people, what I would buy at the grocery store. I think that there's something to that, yes, but I think there's an and. Because the and piece for me is, at the time I didn't know it, but I felt this incongruence of who I truly was and could have been as a leader if I were to be authentically me, that I limited myself because I was too concerned of what I thought was the expectation of other people. So can you talk a little bit about that?
And you got to be true to your authenticity too, Jen. You're absolutely right. And if you find yourself like in a place where you feel incongruence, and I would tell people too that, you know, try to seek and find the place where you can really find your sweet spot and be yourself, because that's when the best you will come forward. And that's when your qualities and things that really are in you can be unleashed. And I think sometimes we feel like we're in roles sometimes in places where we're inhibited and we have to do certain things, certain way that are incongruent with what's in our heart and soul. And I think those are those personal decisions that people have to make to see, are they in the right environment? Or, you know, in this journey of life, right, that we go down, we find different places, right? We find these different places that bring us satisfaction. And sometimes they last for a while and sometimes they don't last for a while. Like there's a really good book, the Who Moved My Cheese. Did you ever read that book before?
I've heard of that book. I haven't read it yet, though.
Oh, that's a great book.
It's a great book. And oh, gosh, I forget the author. It'll come to me. I'll get it in a second. But it's really all about sometimes we find these places, right, where we feel satisfied. And then it changes and we have to adapt and change and move to find the cheese, like these mice that had to find that. And life's kind of like that, where we have to find those places where we feel that we're doing our best work, that we're being our authentic selves, and we're making the contributions to the world that we feel we're going to put on this planet to do.
Yeah.
Jenna, I had an epiphany, if you will, 56 years ago now, after my first year of teaching, when I came home and I said to my wife, I'm not so sure I want to do this. I'm not feeling very confident. I was team teaching with some folks. A couple of them were good, but the whole idea of their expectations didn't fit into my style. They were lecture-oriented, straight rows. That's what they expected. That was the evaluation. That's the plan book, et cetera. I said, I'm not so sure I want to do this. I'm not so sure this is for me. I think, you know, I may give it another year. And I'm going to be myself more. And I did. Now, more, I don't know how much more that is now when I look back on it. But I was able to break out of that expectation mold and do some of the things that I enjoyed, do more cooperative learning with my students, all the rest of those types of things. Now, this is back in 1968. I mean, I once got in trouble with the custodian because my room was It was too hard to sweep the floor. They couldn't go north and south between the aisles because there were no aisles. I had them in circles or, you know, that sort of thing. So that you give yourself as much of that freedom as you think you need. And it's worked for me.
You know what I think too, Jen, is I think there are a lot of people that feel trapped where they work.
Yeah.
And I think that they feel like they're in probably dead-end jobs and they feel that they've got so much potential that's not being used. But there's fear and they stay in those jobs and they stay in those positions because of the fear. They're afraid that if they lose this security, then so they make these compromises where they say, I'll keep my job and my benefits and keep this income because I'm afraid of losing it. Because if I do, I don't know. There's an unknown future out there that I'm afraid of. It takes a lot of courage for folks to be able to say, I do have something more inside of me. I feel there's this different place. And yeah, I'm going to go and pursue this other dream. And I might have to lose some things right now, but I really believe that if I follow what's in my North Star and what's in my heart, I'm going to end up where I'm supposed to be. And I'm okay with that. But that's where the courage that people have to really have to follow those dreams, you know? And I get it. I understand where there's probably most people feel that they have more inside. And I bet you they feel that they're trapped in a certain place and they wish they had more opportunities to do more things. So I encourage everybody out there to you know, believe in your dreams and go like follow what's in your heart. And I encourage, you know, follow that North Star and see where it leads you, because I think you can find yourself on a pretty cool adventure.
Yeah.
And we use a paraphrase of the Martin Luther King letter from the Birmingham jail, where he basically said, you can do some things that are politic. You can do some things that are good for your ego. You can do some things that are meaningful in terms of economics, et cetera, but you need to do things that are right. You need to do the right things. But we would add on, you need to do the things that are right for you as well as for your organization. You got to feel good about it. Can you look in the mirror in the morning and look in the mirror in the evening and say, I did a good job today. I'm going to do a good job today. And you know what? I did. And thank God for that. You know, and it's also moving along with baby steps to get there too. Let's not try radical changes all of a sudden and take risks that might be too crazy for some people. You got to assess. That's the self-reflection. Assess where you're at and how much stretching can I do?
Yeah. And I think that really understanding that you deserve happiness. You don't have to earn it. You deserve it because you woke up this morning. And finding a way for you to choose the things in your life that feel aligned and the places that can grow and stretch with you as you start to change throughout your life, giving yourself permission to change and giving yourself permission to, again, be vulnerable. Going back to the very beginning of our conversation, being the example as a leader, as your most authentic self, is a part of knowing who you are. And that's really what kind of has been circling around this whole conversation. Right. So I love all of it. And it's so
important. If it means that your emotions show, so be it. You need to have the tears with others. You need to have the joys with others. You need to have those experiences.
You're right. I mean, and if it means you want to have purple highlights in your hair, yeah. It means you want to have a tattoo on your arm. You know, I mean, these are the things, you know, if you want to listen to 90s ska music on your way to work, this is all great. And this allows other people to feel safe to be their most authentic selves too in your organization.
Right.
And this is a question I ask all of my guests. What is your dream for the future of education?
Well, it's not just education. It's just kind of a mantra that I've tried to live by is I want to help create a world where people are kind, caring, and empathetic, where they treat each other the way they'd like to be treated, and they believe in a greater good other than themselves. That's kind of like my mantra that I try to live by. So if we can, the things that we do, if they help create that type of an atmosphere in the world, that's what I'm behind.
Mine as well. I certainly believe in trying to help others gain a better understanding of our world, of our differences, of the kinds of samenesses that we have. But one of my key goals for the future is to help others achieve their goals. What I say to all my students is I've had a very robust career. I've enjoyed the journey. Yes, it's had its ups and downs. You know, I've gone through experiences where my hair became grayer, my weight became greater, my height became lower because of the heavy burdens, all the rest of that stuff. But it's been a great career. I encourage others to do it. And I want to help as many people as I can to achieve their goals so that we can have a better educated, a better focused community, and like John's talking about.
I know when I reflect back on the years, you know, when I was a principal for 23 years, I always wanted every day that all of the students and teachers and parents of that school to think, this is the greatest place in the world. I wanted them to think that this is just a wonderful, wonderful place. And I wanted every kid to think their school was the best school on the planet. And I wanted every teacher to think, wow, I love working in this place. And I hope that you can create that type of environment where people have those kinds of feelings.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so good. So after this conversation, I know people are going to want to learn more about you and the books that you've written and the presentations you're presenting at and the conferences you're going to. Where can people learn more about you and how can they get in touch?
Oh, you know, I think one of the best ways would be at NID University, right? My email is jmckenna@niagara.edu. And I know Walt's a professor at Niagara as well. And people contact us at the university all the time.
My email is wpolka, P-O-L-K-A, just like the dance, @niagara.edu.
Fantastic. And I know the links to all of that, as well as information about your books, will all be in the show notes. So it'll be super easy for people to learn more, get your books, get in touch. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been a really robust and potent conversation. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, we appreciate you too, Jen. It's been wonderful.
Thank you, Jen. Appreciate it.
So if you enjoyed today's episode, which I know that you did, make sure that you write a 5-star review, share with a friend, and we'll see you next time on Take Notes.
Incredible, right? Together, we can revolutionize the face of education. It's all possible, and it's all here for you right now. Let's keep the conversation going at Empowered Educator Faculty Room on Facebook.